Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports head of the Union Tribune. I'm in Philadelphia, second half of this six-game road trip. Padres coming off a just disappointing series based on yesterday's result, 3-2 loss, walk-off win for the Reds. Now go face the Phillies, who we'll get into, but you know what? Their offense is struggling too. Their pitching is good too, so this will be interesting. Matt Waldron, get to see the debut tonight. Ryan, I did all that because it just occurred to me that, you know, I always ask you at the start, where do you want to start? And I really don't ever know where you want to start. But we didn't exchange texts today, so I don't know anything we're really going to talk about. So I'll just leave it to you to drive the ship. Where would you like to start?
I'd like to start with the Padres' continued struggles with runners in scoring position. They were 0-13 yesterday, got walked off on. This is not necessarily a team that's having problems getting on base. It's a team that's having problems driving in runs when guys are in scoring position. I know that there are many different factors, but I also know that things like this tend to stack up, right? And this has been a problem of theirs for the last, 2 months? What do we credit this to? Is this just superstars not hitting? Is this bad luck? Is this something different? I mean, because it's not, we played enough baseball that this isn't a fluke at this point. This is kind of who they are.
You know, that is something we're going to need to maybe address, face soon. I mean, this happens in a season. I just don't have to go back too far to go 2022 when there was just this lull where they played, I believe, 5-under for 3 months. Now, they were 17 over before that that started. They were further into the season. So I'm not saying that's what's happening again here, and then they're going to be able to, you know, right themselves. They're going to have to really right themselves. They got to win every series. Or, hey, how about a three-game win streak that might then become four, because they haven't had a three-game win streak in a long time, since the beginning of June. What is it? You know, okay, I'm going to address the one first. Bad luck? Okay, sure. But the Padres say this after every game, and they don't ever have a more receptive audience than me and the respect I have for how difficult this game is. But every game, pretty much, they talk about how they hit balls hard, but right at people. Let's just take yesterday. Small sample size, but this is legit. They were 3-for-12 on hard hit balls, meaning, okay, they hit some hard hit balls and they went to people. Oh, okay. The Reds were 3-for-9, which, you know, isn't that much better, really. Mm-hmm. And yet the Reds found a way to get the key hit. Mm-hmm. They're not getting the key hit. Yeah, the superstars, no one. They just aren't. They're pressing. No one can convince me otherwise that they're not pressing. And I don't mean every at bat. Obviously, they're getting a lot of hits. I just mean enough that they are always in close games. And right now, they're in a stretch where they are 20-25.
Yeah. You had a stat in today's Padres Daily that to me is amazing. Yesterday was the 11th time in their past 45 games which the Padres had between 10 and 14 at-bats with runners in scoring position, and the seventh time they have lost one of those games. So there are 4-7 games in which they have between 10 and 14 runners in scoring position. I don't know what the league average is, but that seems like a terrible number if you're them.
I started to go through to find out what the league average was, but I felt that 3:30 a.m. was plenty late enough for me to have worked on the newsletter, and that was quite a – so all I did then, which I should have done at the first – before that, so 4-7 in their last 11 games where they've had between 10 and 14. Before that, they were 7-1. So that's more in line. I got through enough teams to tell you that it's more that you win 4 out of 5 of those games versus 4 out of 11 of those games.
Right. The Padres are hitting .202 during that 45 game span with runners in scoring position. The second worst total in the major leagues. I mean, to me, that's the problem. If we're going to praise the little things that they do in our last year or so under Mike Schilt, when they fail to do it, I think it's worth pointing that out, because this is not the quote-unquote Padre baseball that was so successful last year.
It's not. They're doing the rest of it, or they'd be getting their butt kicked all the time. So, yeah, this is execution mm-hmm. based on talent, based on staying within yourself, based on, you know, not trying to just drive in two runs when you can drive in one, not trying to hit a homer when a ground out to the right side would move a guy to third and give you a guy at third with less than two outs. You know, these things, and when your pitching staff can most of the time, keep you in it, and you're having trouble and you're not because the runners in scoring position are a problem, but so is the lack of home runs. And that shows up regularly when the other team hits them and beats the Padres. And it showed up Saturday when the Padres were 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position. They had gone 0-for-6, and then Luis Arraez homered. And then Jake Cronenworth hit a 2-run homer. And then with a runner in scoring position, they got their only hit of the game. It was a 3-run homer by Gavin Sheets, and they won by 2 runs. They need to start hitting homers. Look, it worked out for them last year. Line drive hitting turned into home run hitting. The weather heated up. Guys heated up. I'm not a hitting coach. Great. Awesome. I'm not saying you change your approach. But, you know, leading the team or leading the league in strikeout ratio, as in striking out fewer than any other team, that's super. But being fourth worst in home runs is not super. And we all know that sometimes those things go hand in hand where, you know what, we're going to have to hit some home runs here.
Right. Well, and if you don't change your approach, maybe you change your personnel. And I think that that's something, you continue, Kevin, hinting at this and writing about this is, the Padres continue to scour the market for an available right-handed bat. And, we've seen this late in games. We've seen this in big situations where you're letting an Elias Diaz or a Martin Maldonado hit with the game on the line or hit late in games because you don't really have that right-handed pinch hitter. To me, it's reaching a point where, I think that the time is long past to do something. And I'm not saying they're not trying. We know AJ Preller tries. The counterpoint, and I can, before you even say this, Fernando Tatis Jr. is hitting 138 with runners in scoring position over the last 45 games. Xander Bogaerts is hitting 135. Manny Machado is hitting a blistering 222.
They don't have a guy over 290, and Tatis is hitting 207 overall since the beginning of May, and we're at the last day of June. But right. I promise you I wasn't going to say that then, but yes, that is something that I do say when we talk about adding somebody, is that right. What about the stars? But you're right. They do need to add someone. Now, the price is clearly the issue at this point, and that's because there are a lot of buyers and only a few sellers. And really, even if some other teams meet, go into the market, let's say one of them is the Diamondbacks. Well, they're probably not trading with the Padres. Now, could that help the Padres because someone else takes a left fielder or something? The Diamondbacks aren't going to trade their second baseman. They might trade their first baseman. Then another team has their guy, and then that makes another guy available. The reason I mentioned those other positions is the Padres are going for a right-handed bat. They'll make them fit. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like AJ Preller's done that before and they can do it now. They got the DH to work with. You got Gavin Sheets playing left field, playing it capably. So yeah, they need help. That said, and I've forecasted this a couple times, Ryan, we are, is it a 10 game homestand? These three, we are 13 games from the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. Let's say they keep going at this pace and they're 3 games over .500. Well, you say, oh, well, they were only 1 game over .500 at the All-Star break last year. Okay, they had Joe Musgrove. They thought Joe Musgrove was coming back. They thought Yu Darvish was coming back. They had Michael King. They had Dylan Cease dealing, right? I mean, let's not take too much time here. That's not the case now.
They had Jackson Merrill in the All-Star game. They had Jerks and Profar starting an All-Star game.
Great point.
They had guys who were breaking out. I mean, to me, I think the thing that I'm noticing when I watch them now is, with the exception of Gavin Sheets, okay, how many guys in their everyday 8, let's say, are backing up the stats on their baseball card? Maybe Jake Cronenworth? And is that it?
Sure, and that's not, yes, absolutely, and you're not like, I'll defend Jake all day, and if he's playing to that level, then that's fine. That is more than fine. Let's give now. Manny Machado's in a slump right now, but let's give credit. for most of the year, he's been the guy. I mean, I've written a couple times.
He's their best player.
He's one man. You know, we're still in June, and I think he has seven homers, or maybe it's seven since sometime in late May. But no, I think it's seven in June. Anyway, like, let's give Manny his due. Just give Jackson his due. He's hitting 300. The power hasn't come, and it had started to come at this point last year. Really took off in the second half. There is a long ways to go. I haven't said this to any players yet, but I'm about to, possibly, if things were to keep going. Fans, media, those on the outside, we sometimes forget how long a season it is, right? Even I do. I'm always trying to remind people of that, but we tend to forget. Players don't. But players tend to think it's too long sometimes, right? Like, because they're so guarding against being frustrated, so guarding against getting down, trying to remember it's okay if I just keep doing this, if I just keep doing my process. Look, I'm hitting the ball hard or whatever. It's going to work out because it usually does. Well, at some point, sometimes it doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great point. That's a really great point. Mike Shildt has mentioned Kevin a couple of times. You know, that this is a second half team. Mike Shildt, again, his winning percentage in the second half is excellent in his career. And certainly last season on the Padres had, you know, one of the great halves in the history of their franchise, made the playoffs. What is it that Mike Shildt thinks is going to change in the second half? Because at this point, I mean, we have enough of a sample size to know that this is kind of who they are, don't we?
We do. But we got to look at what they did the first 38 games, because that's not too many fewer games than 45. All right. They have also played some better teams in this 45. So that's maybe something to look at, right? Are they just a slightly better than mediocre team, right? Now, it's hard for us to tell them, because slightly better than mediocre can get you into the playoffs. And then slightly better than mediocre can make a run to the World Series like the Diamondbacks did. It's difficult to say you're not good enough this year. Just throw in the towel in July. You can't do that. I would say yes. I understand your greater point. This is who they are. Is it who they are for the rest of the season? I just don't know that. I can't say that, because I also watched a good number of games, and I watched last season when it was different than it is now. And I also refuse to believe that Fernando Tatis Jr. is this bad.
He's got
to pull out of it. I mean, he's got to.
I agree. And you know, you do make a good point there. I think that, you know, are they the team we saw in the first half of the first half? Are they the team that we've seen in the second half of the first half?
Just in between, and you and I talked about this.
Right.
Just in between is good enough to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, flip it at 25-20, and they're 17 games over right now. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Like they're 20-25 over the last 45. That's the period we're talking about. The first 38, and which they were 25-13, I believe, and then the last 45, where they're 20-25. Flip that. Mm-hmm. And then you add it on, and they're 18 games over right now. And honestly, you could easily have flipped that. Now, just as clearly, you could have lost five more of those games that you've won by one run or whatever. But I'm just saying, like, no, I'm not. It's really easy. And believe me, you have no idea how hard it is. I speak to the general you. Maybe you do, Ryan. I don't know. But I am just inundated with emails after every loss, with every reason of why it is. And you get so many, and some of them are, you know, really like well thought out or whatever. And I try to give everybody their consideration, and I start to get like, yeah, this might be it. This is why, yeah. You know, like I'm just not sure yet. And I think that's the responsible thing. I have my opinions just like everybody else. And mine are based on what's all this stuff that's sitting around me right now, and what I watch every day. They might suck, but I'm just not ready to say that.
No, and they are getting sort of slowly but surely some reinforcements back, starting tonight with Matt Waldron. He will make his 2025 season debut. A guy who was really an unheralded star in the first half of last season, really trailed off at the end, said some interesting things, I thought, the last couple of weeks of the season about his confidence level, To me, Kevin, I guess with Matt Waldron, it's one question. Is he a knuckleballer who throws other stuff to keep people off balance? Or is he trying to use a full five-pitch mix with a knuckleball? I think when he commits to being a knuckleballer, he's a pretty darn good pitcher.
And so do the Padres, and hopefully for them and him, so does Matt Waldron. Like, we're not talking about 85%, but 60, some games 70%. Yeah, with a fastball that's faster than most knuckleballers, with a sweeper. Been a while since I watched Matt Waldron pitch. But yeah, like the knuckleball and the knuckleball in the zone, because look, sometimes it's going to be flat and guys are going to hit it a long way. You're a knuckleballer. That's the way it is, right? Watch some really good knuckleballers get crushed before. And sometimes you're going to do what Matt Waldron did in this very yard last year. And we'll talk about pitching matchups, whereas he's going to get Zach Wheeler, right? Last year here, the Padres had lost five games in a row where it was the final game of a six-game road trip. They were in danger of losing all six games on the road trip, and he was facing Ranger Suarez, who had a one-something ERA and led the majors with like 10 victories already, or maybe it was 11. And Suarez pitched pretty good, and Waldron outpitched him and held the Phillies to one run on five hits over seven innings. That is what, and by the way, that was a part of a 16 start stretch where his ERA was 2.6 or 2.7 and was like one of the top 10 in the major leagues. So like, that is who Matt Waldron can be when he's believing in that knuckleball and he's throwing it.
Right. Exactly. And that's, you know, it's Matt Waldron and then a possibility of Yu Darvish coming back after that. And then maybe Michael King. You know, Kevin, you had a post the other day about Michael King and the latest steps for him. It sounds like things are trending slowly in the right direction. Is that a fair assessment?
Fair assessment. Well put. Let's, I almost want to say, yes, well put, let's move on. Because at this point, and I think Michael King would agree to some extent, at this point, putting too much attention on it, like it doesn't merit it. We don't know where he's at. But absolutely 100% we can say, it certainly is looking better than it was 2 weeks ago.
Right. Throwing is better than not throwing.
And throwing from 105 feet and, right, and smiling and feeling good. And I just bring that up because he's such a good and nice and decent human being and happy and jokey. And man, this man was just so bummed. It was just sad to see. And also, that makes me believe that he believes. There's... Right. We don't know. The team's telling us. Like, I talked to other doctors and all that stuff to try to get an understanding, but they're not looking at Michael King, so they don't really know. So sometimes it's like, we don't know if we're getting like the full skinny, but when I can see that Michael King is believing in how he's feeling, that's definitely a positive.
Yep, absolutely. Padres-Phillies three-game series, 3:35 p.m. starts tonight and tomorrow, and then the 10:05 a.m. start on Wednesday. Let's get into pitching matchups here a little bit. Matt Waldron pitching tonight against Zach Wheeler. Matt Waldron had a 5.24 ERA at AAA El Paso, which means absolutely nothing. Struck out. I mean, to me, the big number there is 22 strikeouts against just seven walks. Especially if you're a knuckleballer, the key is keeping it in the zone. He's going up against last year's Cy Young runner-up, Zach Wheeler, 7-3 with a 2.45 ERA. Talk about just a contrast in styles. What a fun pitching matchup to start this series.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be a Padres hitter or a Phillies hitter tonight. You know, yeah. So, hey, look, Padres, they did, man. It's just, it's like, if you get over the sort of disgust at the 0-13 and all this, you know, I mean, gosh, every day I'm having to find new stats to try to put a different shade of lipstick on this thing. If you get past just the bottom line results, the Padres make some good points, and they faced good pitchers this weekend, and they did well. They're facing good pitchers here, at least the next two nights, and who knows what they're going to do.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. Christopher Sanchez against Nick Pivetta on Tuesday night. Yeah, Pivetta 8-2, 3.36 ERA, a former Philly going up against Christopher Sanchez, who might be the best pitcher most people I know don't know about. 6-2, 2.79, striking out nearly 10 guys per nine innings. Probably gets overlooked in his own rotation because he's not the injured Aaron Nola or Ranger Suarez or Zach Wheeler, but a darn good pitcher at this point.
Five quality starts in a row, and not just quality, but a 1.85 ERA. That's seven runs in 34 innings. that is almost seven innings per start during that run. Yeah. Christopher with no H, or sorry, with just one H, after the C, first C there. Christopher, always have to remember that. Spelling's only important to us, Ryan, not to the listeners. Shut up, Kevin.
Wednesday, Dylan Cease versus Mick Abel. Abel's been great. 23-year-old rookie. Was supposed to start in Atlanta on Friday. Rain moved his start. So lucky Padres. They get to face a guy who's 2-1 with a 3.47 ERA against Dylan Cease, who continues to be a riddle wrapped in an enigma, wrapped in a big mustache. Don't really know what we got out of him.
You don't. And you saw what you saw last year. You saw good streak, bad streak, good streak, bad streak, good streak. And I guess not great in the playoffs. And you just were like, okay. And you look back at the stats and you talk to people and you said, okay, so that's who he was in Chicago. And so, come in this year and you go, oh, okay. Yeah. He'll find his groove and it'll be fine. And he found his groove and lost it. And it wasn't bad. It wasn't like last year where it was seven or eight starts at a time. It was like, you know, three pretty good and a couple okay before that, where you can say, okay, yeah, he's pitching better. But that dominant guy, just been elusive.
And it speaks to how good Philadelphia's pitching depth is, that the Padres don't face Ranger Suarez or Aaron Nola on this trip, because Aaron Nola's hurt out till August. Ranger Suarez, you just missing the rotation, and yet you're facing three studs.
I don't know anything about Mick Abel except like it's like his sixth start. He's like for 5 years a top 100 prospect, right? Yep. First time seeing him. They kept a top 100 prospect as a pitcher and brought him up and put him in this rotation, and he's learning from great guys. And yeah, it seems like, you know, when you come to Philadelphia, that's what you're going to face. Look, they've been struggling. They, five of the last six games, they have scored two or fewer runs, been shut out twice in that span. I think they scored 13 in the other one against the Braves. But also in that span, by the way, their pitching has allowed two or fewer runs in like six of the last seven. So it's like, it's almost like the two teams are mirror images in that way. They're atop the NL East. So if the Padres were in the NL East with their record, they would be three games behind the Phillies. So
interesting. Yeah. And Phillies could get Bryce Harper back as soon as tonight. He's been out with wrist inflammation. You're looking for somebody to kickstart that offense. Bryce Harper's a pretty good one to add, and certainly somebody who Padre fans, I think, always follow a little bit, because that was the old winter of either Manny or Bryce Harper, right?
That was a little bit of a Peter Seidler fairy tale, but, you know, like, it's cool.
I remember hearing stories that Bryce Harper got married at the temple there in La Jolla, and everybody thought that meant something. And as it turns out, it didn't really mean anything. Kevin, I always put you on the spot at the end, and here's a simple one, but it's a baseball question. Okay. Speak to me as if I am five.
Wait, Ryan, I already do.
Speak to me as if I am three, then. What is up with Robert Suarez?
Speak to you as if you're five about a closer who throws 100 miles an hour. Yeah, Robert Suarez is throwing pitches down the middle, is as simple as I can put it. I have not gotten into it with Padres people or scouts about, hey, what's happening with Robert Suarez? Here's what I see, and it's fairly obvious that every time I look up and one of those hits, it's a changeup, and it's in the middle or close enough, or it's up, and he's getting behind guys. And then guys are able to sit on the fastball. I don't think. Now, I looked at the metrics. I don't see. Again, I haven't talked to people. I don't see how it's possible that fastball's moving as much as it was. Take a look. Yes, it was a fantastic at bat by Ellie De La Cruz. But people have been able to do that to Robert Suarez and foul off, and make contact, find holes through the middle of the infield. Look. Closers live on the edge a lot. Had Tyler Wade caught that ball, there's one out instead of Ellie De La Cruz on, and Robert Suarez has to pitch, and he has to be aware of Ellie De La Cruz, who everyone in the ballpark thought was going to steal. He didn't, but, like, it could have gone differently. There are times Robert gets away with stuff, and I'm not making excuses at all. He's been terrible. I'm just saying, like, he lives on the edge. He's got 23 saves. Most start most closers do. This is the guy we watch every day. We turn them into superheroes. And Robert Suarez is not a superhero.
I'm old enough to remember Trevor Hoffman blowing saves and Trevor Hoffman having bad months. And Trevor Hoffman's in Cooperstown. Not to say Robert Suarez is.
Right. There was no Twitter, but whatever there was, wasn't it basically every time? Because I would hear it at the grocery store. I'd hear it, you know, whatever. Trevor Hoffman's done. He can't pitch like that. He can't have a closer who throws like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he did just fine. Not to say Robert Suarez is headed to Cooperstown, but it's or even the best be fine. Struggle.
Right. I don't know. It's pretty ugly right now.
It is. It really is. And again, this is unfair to Robert Suarez. The fact that Adrian Morejon came in and had perhaps the most stress-free save of the Padres season, now that's in the back of my head, right? Every time they bring Suarez out, you go like, but Morejon, you know, he's there if you need him. So.
It's funny because I started to think about that because that's what I have to do, right? Like I try to have to think about something, sometimes just barely ahead, sometimes well ahead of when is it going to be a thing. And so I've started to think about this and it feels like closer is one of those things that teams sometimes, especially when it's an established guy, you know, are the slowest to make a change on.
Mm-hmm. It's a great point. That's a great point. And again, if Robert Suarez gets the job done 90% of the time, is that good enough? Or are those, you know, five wins something that's going to be the difference between the Padres making the playoffs or not?
What you should do is, and I've done it enough to know, I don't know what's happening this year, but I've done it enough in past years to know that there are saves where a reliever comes in and gives up a run, you know, but he had a 3-run lead when he came in, you know?
Right. Right.
And Robert Suarez hasn't had more than a couple of those this year. I don't have my chart right there, and we're running out of time. But when he comes in, it's like, if you make a mistake, you're going to blow this save.
Yeah. Well, and it's because, and here's the thing, that's why all these things are connected, right? He's coming into one run games because they're not hitting, right? And so he comes in, all of a sudden, he has a really narrow path to victory, let's say. One mistake can kill you, right? I mean, there's. Say what you will about this year's Padres. There aren't a whole lot of easy nights at the ballpark for him or for them.
Or for the writer.
Or for you.
Exactly. It is truly unbelievable. It is. And there is not a question that it wears on them. I'm not saying they can't keep doing it, but they might be can't keep doing it. It is incredible how every game is just razor thin.
Yep. Not good for a guy on deadline either. I'm just saying. Padres Phillies 3-game series starting tonight, 3:35 San Diego time from Philadelphia. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, Kevin, stay cool and dry, and we'll see you when you get back here for the big July 4th weekend series.
Yeah, I imagine that we probably aren't doing one July 4th, so probably next Monday.
Sounds good.
All right.
Sounds good. We'll have to check with our producer JK on that. But yeah, that sounds about right. He is the best. He is the absolute best. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.